Things got pretty heated at a roundtable on schooling in Connecticut. Officials say the state's in-school mask mandate could extend beyond the end of September. Commissioner Deidre Gifford says that's if COVID-19 rates stay high in the state.
We are seeing lots of COVID around the country, and we are seeing that in schools where masks were not required at the beginning of the school year and there was lots of COVID in the community. We've seen very significant disruptions to in-person learning.
The roundtable ended early after it was interrupted by a mob of anti-vaccine and anti-mask hecklers. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut-New York region. Coming up, former Governor Andrew Cuomo is in more hot water. A tribal-run cannabis dispensary in the Hamptons will open later this year. And the story behind one of America's most famous board games. I'm Sabrina Garone. There's more trouble for former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who resigned on Monday amid several scandals, including a report by Attorney General Tish James that he sexually harassed 11 women. The state's Ethics Commission voted to ask James to probe an alleged illegal leak by the commission to Cuomo. Karen DeWitt reports.
The discussions during the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, or JCOPES, executive sessions are supposed to be confidential. But two commissioners say former Governor Cuomo somehow found out that the panel, where he held the majority of appointees, wanted to open a corruption investigation into Cuomo's former aide, Joe Percoco. Percoco is now in federal prison after being convicted of running a bribery and kickback scheme. The motion to involve the AG was brought by Gary Levine, appointed by the Republican Senate Minority Leader.
The motion to refer the breach of confidentiality that occurred and arguably official misconduct that occurred in a cover-up of it to the Attorney General for Attorney General's investigation.
A former commissioner appointed by Speaker Carl Hastie, Julie Garcia, has said that she was told by an assembly lawyer that Cuomo called the speaker to complain about her private vote. Another JCOPE commissioner appointed by Hastie, James Yates, says he was a witness to that leak. He says he has texts, emails, and other documentation to back up his claim. The state's inspector general, also appointed by Cuomo, at the time investigated the matter, but did not interview the former governor or the assembly speaker. Nevertheless, the report concluded that the leak accusation could not be substantiated. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
The construction of a tribal-run medical marijuana facility in the Hamptons just got an $18 million boost. An agreement will finance and eventually help operate the cannabis farm and dispensary when it opens later this year. WSHU's J.D. Allen reports.
The Shinnecock Indian Nation partnered with Tilt Holdings, an Arizona-based company that develops tribal cannabis projects. The company will receive over 11% of the facility's gross revenue. The Shinnecock company, Little Beach Harvest, will co-manage the facility on the tribe's territory on Montauk Highway in Southampton. Tilt says there will be a native preference in hiring for dozens of jobs. The tribe is also considering a separate recreational marijuana proposal. It requires a full vote by a tribe's members to create rules for local businesses to sell pot. J.D. Allen, WSHU News.
Coming up, the surprising history behind Monopoly, but first headlines and a message from After All Things supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
You U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut says the attacks in Kabul should in no way shake the moral responsibility the U.S. has in Afghanistan to evacuate U.S. citizens and Afghan allies. But Blumenthal says the timetable of any withdrawal should not be determined by others. He says U.S. troops need to stay in Afghanistan as long as needed. Overdose deaths in and around New Haven were at a record high during the pandemic in 2020. That's according to a report from Data Haven. Deaths increased 40%, up to 141 overdoses last year compared to 101 the year before. The report covers data for Bethany, Hamden, North Haven, Woodbridge, and New Haven. The study found nearly all deaths involved the synthetic opioid fentanyl. New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, who manages the New York State Common Retirement Fund, says he's using the fund's investment power to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion at companies. DiNapoli announced he voted against directors at companies that failed to diversify their boards. He also got support for shareholder proposals to promote more diversity and accountability at companies. How did Atlantic City end up as the inspiration for all those place names in Monopoly? Marvin Gardens, Park Place, the Boardwalk. It's a tale of race and social conflict you'd never expect when you sit down to play one of America's most famous board games. Davis Donovan tells the story for WSHU's Off the Path podcast.
Mary Pallon is the author of The Monopolists, a book about the hidden history of Monopoly. She says a lot of people think the game originated in the 1930s from a man who sold it to Parker Brothers. But its predecessor was actually patented decades earlier, in 1904, by Elizabeth McGee.
Liz McGee was a really fascinating person.
She was born into an abolitionist family in Illinois. She was an early advocate for women's suffrage and racial equality.
And she creates games.
McGee used one of those games to promote an economic ideology called Georgism, named after Henry George, a 19th century economist and social reformer. Georgism is kind of complicated, but it's the idea that land should belong equally to everyone. McGee called her game the Landlord's Game.
And when you look at the board, you see a lot of today's Monopoly board in it, the circular design. You go around and around and around. Instead of free parking, you know, obviously cars aren't as big of a deal in 1904, so you have free park.
Georgists liked the idea of having lots of shared public spaces. Elizabeth McGee set up the game so you could play it two ways. The monopolist way, like the version we know today, where you gather up as much property as you can and other players pay you rent. And the Georgist way, where the goal was to work together and share resources so everyone had enough to get by.
And it's the monopolist version of her game that really starts to take off, which I've always thought was fascinating, that you have these people who are anti-monopolist in their political practices, but when it comes to the game they want to play, they're very interested in clobbering each other.
Mary says Elizabeth McGee's game spread around the U.S.
People localized the board, so you would make your own version of the Landlord's Game, and you would infuse, you know, the properties or things in your area and community as you were playing it.
One area where it spread was the Northeast, among what Mary calls a who's who of left-wing America. And that's how the game found its way to the New Jersey shore.
And Atlantic City in the late 1920s and early 1930s is a really fascinating place. It's kind of like New York and Philly, a hub for immigrants and a lot of different political groups and a lot of different thinkers, religions, etc.
A bunch of game designers tried to sell their own versions despite McGee's patent, including Charles Darrow. He learned the game from an Atlantic City resident, then sold his slightly modified version to Parker Brothers in 1934. Mary says no one knows why Elizabeth McGee's patent was ignored, but Darrow got credit as the game's inventor. The Monopoly board hasn't changed much since the Parker Brothers game debuted, but Atlantic City has, except for the famous boardwalk. The shoreline is dominated by high-rise buildings. Many once housed casinos that started to spring up in the 1970s. It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon in the middle of the summer. The boardwalk is crowded with families and groups of friends. There are shops selling chintzy t-shirts and souvenirs. I find, on the boardwalk, a green street sign that says Park Place. That makes this spot the intersection between the two most expensive properties on the Monopoly board. I head up to the Atlantic City Free Public Library on the corner of Atlantic Avenue, that'll cost me $260, and Tennessee Avenue, another $180. Jacqueline Silvermario is an archivist and a fourth-generation resident.
You know, Atlantic City is in my blood. I grew up, you know, by the shore, and I was here a little bit after the casinos got here in 78. I love Atlantic City. It has changed. Mm-hmm. Significantly since I was younger.
Jacqueline says most of us are likely to associate Monopoly with the design from the 1980s, but the library has older versions, like an original Parker Brothers version from 1935.
This is the board. The board was wood. It wasn't the cardboard that we have now. I usually don't take this out because it's so old and it's starting to fall apart.
Jacqueline says Atlantic City was in a heyday in the 1930s.
It was the place to go. The boardwalk had the beach. It had its clubs. So it was the place to come. Of course, it had its other side, like the mob, speakeasies, and the underbelly. Every city has it. It was also segregated.
Jacqueline's family lived that segregation for decades.
We were Kentucky Avenue. We were North Side. North Side was the segregated, where all African Americans lived. Where my grandma, my great-grandma, my uncles, and my aunts lived.
Kentucky Avenue was home to a thriving black business district, but it's still worth only a little more than half of Boardwalk's $400 on the Monopoly board. And low-income areas like Mediterranean and Baltic Avenues are the cheapest properties on the board, just $60 each. Author Mary Pallon says the Monopoly Board is a record of Atlantic City's history of segregation.
It very much mimics the cartography of the town at the time. You had very strong color lines drawn at hotels and beaches.
Monopolists author Mary Pallon says part of this town's history is oddly preserved in a game because of happenstance. People actually believed for decades that Monopoly was invented in Atlantic City.
So I think it's interesting that the myth-making is very central to that too, but that's also part of Atlantic City, right? Like Atlantic City is very much about fantasy. At its peak, really, it was about aspiration, and there was something kind of dreamlike to it. So I guess in a way that's fitting as well.
Elizabeth McGee was finally revealed as the game's initial inventor in the 1970s. Another inventor was fighting a lawsuit over his game called Anti-Monopoly, a satire that sought to bring the game back to its Georgist roots. His research led him to Elizabeth McGee. But even after that revelation, Parker Brothers maintains Charles Darrow invented the present-day game. This is the detour season of Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Dunovan, usually on the road from New York to Boston, but spending a little time in the Garden State.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And as always, you can send us your thoughts and story ideas to news@WSHU.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Sabrina Garone. We'll talk tomorrow.